You're listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar Podcast, talking all things fundraising, charities, nonprofits, and more. Here's your host, as always, Simon Scriver.
Let me read this testimonial. The universe has a sense of humor. I know this because when my husband Ted was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, I was already dealing with essential tremor. Just to be clear, I do not find it essential. We fight the good fight. Imagine our excitement at finding something new that we were capable of doing. Mo's unsteady hand art class helps us and others to socialize, and we feel creative in a way we thought not possible given our physical difficulties. The unsteady hand is a gift. That's an amazing testimonial. That was written by someone about this nonprofit called The Unsteady Hand. And the founder of The Unsteady Hand is with me today, a gentleman named Mo Unstead. Hello, Mo.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm just right. How are you?
Just right, are you?
That's I'm just good. Right.
Good. So you're. Thanks for joining me today. There's a few things I'd love to chat to you about today. You founded The Unsteady Hand.
I did, yes.
What is The Unsteady Hand?
The Unsteady Hand is it's an organization that kind of gives people with Parkinson's a creative outlet to do something other than exercise. When you get Parkinson's, they tell you you have to exercise and you have to exercise and you have to exercise. And we wanted to give something a little different to people with Parkinson's. Still working on fine motor skills and some of that stuff is so important, but I just thought it was important for people to be able to express themselves creatively and be able to express themselves creatively and hang out and do something that's not a support group, because there's a lot of support groups. We're not a support group. We don't talk about Parkinson's in our group, which is really nice. I was going to make a rule, actually, when we started, that you weren't allowed. It's like Fight Club. You're not allowed to talk about Fight Club or Fight Club or whatever it is. I don't even know the rule. I never saw the movie. But I was going to make a rule that you couldn't talk about Parkinson's at our creativity labs.
Yeah.
And I forgot, because I was so excited and so nervous at our first one. But it turns out that nobody talks about Parkinson's at our labs because we're all engaged with something else. And it's really amazing.
Yeah.
One of the problems with Parkinson's, a diagnosed symptom of Parkinson's, is apathy. So getting people out of the house and doing something other than sit around and moping is really hard.
Yeah.
So one of my goals was to get people out of the house and create community, something other than a support group.
Apathy is an actual symptom?
An actual symptom of Parkinson's. You know, Parkinson's, the gig with Parkinson's is dopamine. It's dopamine not working anymore. And dopamine makes you pretty happy. Makes you have, I mean, you eat chocolate, dopamine goes up. You have sex, dopamine goes up. Mm-hmm. All those things are important with dopamine. So when dopamine's not working, you have Parkinson's. And when dopamine's not working, it's hard to feel good.
Yeah.
Like I said, this is a diagnosed symptom of Parkinson's, is apathy.
I know very little about Parkinson's, so I'm probably going to ask a lot of stupid questions.
No, that's right. I'll have some answers, but probably not all of them. I'm still learning about answers. Parkinson's myself.
what is your connection with Parkinson's? In case it's
so, I was my general practitioner, my GP doctor, about a year and a half ago. I went in with a small tremor in my pinky, and he said, I hate to tell you this. He did a couple of tests. He checked some movements and he said, I've got some bad news. I think you've got Parkinson's. You need to go see a neurologist. Mm. I was like, wow. Okay. So that's how it all started. That was about a year and a half ago. And I've seen three neurologists since then. Was originally diagnosed with something called a functional tremor. I have no idea what that is. even after Googling it 100 times, I still don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But after then we saw another neurologist and we kind of played around with the idea of Parkinson's for a while, had a DAT scan, which is a brain scan, like an MRI kind of thing.
Yeah.
That came back inconclusive. And my neurologist was like, you probably have Parkinson's. And then he said, you have Parkinson's. And then about a month later, he said, well, maybe you don't have Parkinson's. And I was like, this is dumb. I'm going to see somebody else.
Yeah. Is this a real doctor? Or just someone?
Right. Right. So I went to go see a movement disorder specialist, which is a neurologist who's done a fellowship in Parkinson's and movement disorders. Okay. And we did another DAT scan. And he pretty much within a week said, you've got Parkinson's. Welcome to the club. So that's my connection to Parkinson's. So I found out that I had Parkinson's kind of a year and a half ago. And found out for real I had Parkinson's about a month and a half ago.
Okay. Wow. And how are you feeling?
That's I feel great. I feel great. I feel good. I don't feel great. Sometimes I feel like crap.
Yeah.
Mostly I feel good. Better living through modern pharmaceuticals, you know.
Yeah.
I've got some good meds that I'm on that help me through my day.
Yeah. So the unsteady hand, you're a, what do you call them? Service users? Clients?
Participants. We'll call them participants. Artists. We don't call them artists, actually. That's another long story, but we won't talk about that if you don't want to. So we call them participants.
Because they're no good?
No, just the opposite. When we first started, I was telling people we do art with people with Parkinson's. And when I was presenting it to people with Parkinson's, I'd say, we do art. And the first thing out of people's mouth was, I'm not an artist. I can't draw.
Yeah.
So we have totally taken the word art and artistic and artist out of our vocabulary.
Mm.
And we talk about playfulness and creativity and imagination. And we talk about that stuff. And then I can get people engaged. I hate to put this out in public and maybe we'll edit this out, but I'm tricking my participants into becoming fine artists and they don't know it. So
I don't know that it's out there.
Maybe they're going to know what I'm doing, but
yeah. Well, it's intimidating, isn't it? Like art can be intimidating for a lot of people. I spent some time in hospital and we did art therapy and a lot of like, you know, most people are like, I'm not an artist and I don't want to do it. And it was very like, they tried to make it really safe. And like, you don't have to show anyone what you're doing. You don't have to talk about it. It's just about the act of doing it.
Right. And that's exactly what we're about, process, not product.
Yeah.
So it's about, you know, for the first couple of labs we had, nobody took anything home, which I found really interesting. They cared about being in a group of people doing something together and creating, but they didn't care about the end product. They didn't want to take it. Now that they were a little deeper in and they're starting to produce some cool stuff, they're starting to take it home. But even still, they leave 90% of the things produced during a lab with me. And I keep it all. I don't throw anything away.
Nice.
But it's interesting that it's like you say, it's all about process. It's not about product.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're about. And the products turn out amazing. At some point, we'll pitch the website and all that stuff. And I put pictures of everything we do on the website and Facebook and Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
So that family members from across the country can log in, like grandkids and kids, because most of my participants are older and are not net savvy, but their families are. So this way their families can see what they're doing from wherever they are in the country or the world. And it's That's documented great. And they get to share it without having to send emails with 20 pictures in it, which is a pain.
Yeah.
And most of them don't email anyway. I'm finding
out. I mean, you're obviously a very visual organization, so it's a great way of people seeing what you're doing and getting them engaged. And from a marketing point of view.
No, a lot of what we do is marketing. I'm not shy about that. We're throwing a big party next month, and it's a party to say thank you, but it's a party to gather emails.
Well, yeah, okay, well, let's take a step back. So how did you and me meet? Do you remember?
I do. We met at the AFP, and I don't know what, I think it's the American Fundraisers Professionals, but I think I'm making that up. I'm not sure that's right. Is that right?
Association.
Oh, that's close.
Fundraising Professionals. Yeah, that's pretty close. You're obviously an avid.
Well, I saw you were. I actually didn't know about you or who you were. I just knew it was a fundraising event, seminar, and it was $200 and some odd to attend. I don't even remember $250. And I was like, well, I can't afford that. So I sent them an email saying, I'm new and upcoming. I can't afford this. Can I come anyway? And they said, for $60, you can come. So they gave me a scholarship. They didn't say $60. They said, we'll give you this much off, but it was $60. So to me, it was $60. And so I just showed up to learn about fundraising, and you were the keynote speaker, and I was the first guy there. And we ended up chatting before everything started for, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Maybe 20. And then you did your thing, and then we were done, and we were chatting a little bit afterwards, and then you needed a ride to the airport. So I made some people angry by giving you a ride to the airport. Let's edit that out.
We just kind of hung out, didn't we?
Yeah, we just kind of hung out, and we had pretty rotten traffic. It was the first time I was happy that we had rotten traffic to get the APIA, because it gave us more time to chat, which is cool.
It was funny. We were talking. I mean, we were both saying that we don't really take on new friends anymore.
Right.
We're both kind of, And yeah, it was just kind of, we kind of clicked, didn't we?
I would say so. Yeah, which is unusual for me.
So I'm curious why, you know, when people set up a nonprofit, they, not that fundraising is the last thing on their mind, you know, fundraising is a big driver right at the beginning. People did a lot of fundraising, but I don't recall really meeting anyone who sets up a charity and goes very early to one of these professional fundraising events.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fundraising in the early days is usually quite not unprofessional, but it's like ad hoc and novice. It's not planned and stuff like that. Yeah, maybe novice, like not to patronize anyone. But right. I thought it was really interesting to see you actually consciously going to something like this
right.
in those early days. Why are you?
Why?
What's your approach to fundraising?
Oh, geez. Well, boy, that's a tough question. My approach right now is a little scattered, a kind of a shotgun approach. That I'm doing a little bit of a lot of different things, which I don't think is particularly effective. But I'm experimenting. It's more of experimentation than shotgun. So I'm trying new things, different things. I started a t-shirt campaign, which made very little money, but it was good PR. And it was no upfront cost. And it took me about 3 minutes to design the t-shirt. And I have $100 in the bank after 3 weeks. And $100 is not much. But, you know, one of my board members, they always say, how do you eat an elephant? And it's one bite at a time. Yeah. So for a new organization with a very small budget, $100 is significant, especially when you consider I spent 3 minutes invested and that's it. And then maybe 10 minutes posting it on Facebook and Twitter. So maybe 15 minutes of total investment, we ended up with $100. That's pretty good ROI. But that's kind of like the scatter.
That's if someone offered you $400 an hour, you'd take it.
You'd be taking a second. Yeah. Are you offering me $400 an hour?
No, not yet.
No, not yet. Okay. So we've done a couple of events, which I have found the ROI on that is poor. Return on investment is not great. They're a lot of fun. I've changed the name to our events to friendraisers. I'm sure that's cliche and I'm not the first person to do that, but we talk to them as friendraisers rather than fundraisers because events are a lot of work, lot of work on the front end and a lot of work on the back end. And there are a lot of work during the event and you don't make a ton of money. At least we haven't. You know, I talked to other development professionals who make $800,000 at their events and I'm like, wow, that's amazing. You know, but it's a different scale for us.
Yeah, these are established.
Right.
They're established organizations with a big audience.
Right. And we have a very, you know, our mailing list is 90 people strong right now. Right.
Okay.
So, and only 60% of the people who I send an email to open those emails. I know this because I have a MailChimp. I can tell who opened it, when opened it, and how, and what they clicked on.
That's pretty high. Yeah. Well, the sector average is about 30% open rate.
But it's skewed because we're new and everybody on my mailing list cares, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a valid number, 60% yet. Ask me in 3 years, it'll probably be 30%. I hope it's not, but it'll probably be closer to 30%.
Yeah.
But I get the fact that the 60% is not real. It's probably not sustainable.
Well, you've got a deeper relationship with those people. And I think that's your goal over the next few years, isn't it? It's to grow, but maintain that deep relationship.
Right.
And that's where nonprofits struggle is because as you get bigger, you can't have a deep personal relationship with every single person.
Right.
You've got that wider net. So how do you maintain that, I wonder?
Yeah, I don't know. I think some of it is it's being real. I mean, that's maybe another cliche, but I think if you're honest and real about what you're doing and how you're doing it, and when you get big, you tell people, hey, we're big and it's hard for me to reach out to everybody. So I'm sending a mass email. I mean, I felt really guilty the first bulk email I sent. Because when we first started, I literally emailed every individual an email because I didn't want it to look like I was emailing everybody. And finally, I sent an email to everybody that said, I'm really sorry, but this is going to 30 people all at once rather than me emailing 30 people because it's like you're saying, grow. Things change. And then when we started using MailChimp, the little plug for MailChimp, I sent an email that said, hey, by the way, this is MailChimp. This is what it looks like. And I apologize. I'm not sending you your own email, but we're getting too big and I can't send 80 emails anymore.
Yeah.
Thanks for your understanding and patience. And people emailed back saying, great, thanks. That's amazing. Nobody ever says that. right? So if we were just being real and just acknowledging our growth and acknowledging that we couldn't participate on the same level of interaction because we were growing. And I think people appreciated rather than just doing it, telling them, hey, we're doing this and we don't feel great about it, but it's real. Right. Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense, but
It does. I mean, I think that's, I get the impression, you know, we've spoken a few times, but where a lot of your early success has come from is just from you being real and open and honest and connecting with people on that human level. People respond to that.
Right.
There's a saying in fundraising, which is, you know, humans give to humans or people give to people. And so the more human you are in your connection, I think you're without effort, you're doing that.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's a little effort, but it comes naturally, I think.
Yeah, I got one of your mails the other day, and it was for your event. What's your event in January called?
It is called Shaking in the New Year, an Unsteady Gala. And gala was not my word. The our partner really wanted the word gala in there, so I kind of designed the whole name around gala.
Americans love that word for some reason.
I know it's bizarre.
But shaking in the new year, do you know what? As someone who, you know, I work with a lot of nonprofits, the first thing that popped into my head when I saw that was like, oof, that wouldn't get approved by most organizations.
Right. Because
it could be seen as offensive or insensitive.
Right.
I love that you've done that. Do you think when you write that?
Oh yeah. Like someone, kind of. You know, we have like three mottos that we use a lot on our literature and when we're talking to each other as participants and staff, and those are, we got this, all lowercase, no period, embrace your tremor, and free your tremor, free your mind, right? Mm-hmm. So it's about acknowledging you have, it's kind of what we were just talking about a second ago. It's about acknowledging the reality of our situation. We have tremors. Well, not everybody with Parkinson's has a tremor, but most people with Parkinson's have a tremor. And to me, if you don't find the humor in it, it's really flippin' depressing, right? Mm. Parkinson's in and of itself is not fun, right? It's not it's not a good thing to have. But we're making it pretty fun as a group to be engaged with each other as people that have Parkinson's.
Yeah.
So I'm not afraid of. And if you're the type of person who is offended by shaking in the new year, you don't belong at our party anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
You're no fun, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, fair. And then I have a board, which is really cool. I have a baby board. I have a board of people who've never been on a board before.
Yeah.
And they're all yes people. And two of them are artists and two of them have Parkinson's. And one of them is a PT for people with Parkinson's.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a lot of restrictions on what we do and how I do it. When I say we, I mean me.
Yeah.
And I've been encouraged by a couple of people locally, kind of a couple of mentors in town. Deb Thornton, who runs the Imagination Space, is amazing. And her advice to me was keep it that way. She said lots of boards, lots of arts organizations go boardy. That's my own adjective. And that they get swamped and bogged down by their board because they don't have the same kind of attitude and vision about art. And she said, keep your board full of artists and creatives and don't worry about getting lawyers and accountants. So those people will work for you for money or they'll give you their services for free if they believe in what you're doing. You don't need them on your board just to get the service. Because I think a lot of people get boards to perform services for them. If that makes any sense. They try and align roles for their board members that are like the accountant, the lawyer,
the HR person, I was working with an organization with a board like that where they every time they spoke to someone or every time they got someone who was like skilled like a lawyer or an accountant who said I want to do something, their gut reaction was to like invite them to join the board.
Right.
And then, but then you have the headache of them being on the board, or at least they have the headache of being on the board.
Right.
And there's obviously a lot of other options. There's like, whatever. So, you know, committees, there's like ambassadors, there's all different ways people can be involved without that level. But on the flip side of it, I mean, you do, you know, a board full of artists, with all due respect to artists.
No, so. I hear where you're going. Just let it go. I can handle it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a really polite way to do this.
No, don't worry about it. That's not your style.
Artists, I love artists.
Yeah, that's nice.
But to get a room full of artists organizing fucking anything sounds like a nightmare.
It's almost impossible.
Well, but it's kind of fun. You know, they have their it'll be a lot of fun. But yeah, I mean it's just, I suppose it's thinking about your board isn't always there to say yes and to compliment you. Your board is there to challenge you.
Right.
And yeah, you're going to have a much easier life if they're not challenging you, but the board is there for the good of the organization.
Right. And as I grow, I think I will learn, that'll make more sense to me. Right now, that's just terrifying. And I don't like the idea of a board that could fire me. Let's be honest. Right. So for right now, I think, we talked at our board meetings about organically growing into a pseudo board where we have a couple people who are not board members and never been board members and don't want to be board members, and a couple people who are board members who've been board members who want to be boardy and kind of have a coalition of sorts of people that are not all boardy. Does that make sense? I mean, I hate to use the word boardy like it's a bad thing, but as an ED, boardies. Yeah. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I've met who are EDs who are like, I hate my board. My board is the biggest pain in my butt. I can't do anything. My hands are always tied. I quit.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't ever want to get there. Right. Yeah. And if I have any power over that, I'm not going to get there.
Well, it's strange. I mean, it seems in the fundraising world, especially people, myself included, we criticize boards and joke about boards because usually where it stems from is the board comes in and they hate fundraising or they don't want to be a part of it. And the boards that aren't like that, the one where people love boards are when there's realistic expectations of board members coming in. Mm-hmm. So the board members come in and know that they're going to have to take part in fundraising or know that they're expected to do this or know that they're expected to turn up for an event. And that's where I think it's just managing expectations and you minimize like arguments with people in any walk of life when you have similar expectations.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I think roles is important. You know, like we have one of our board members, she came right out of our last meeting and said, I don't raise money. I don't want to do it. I'm not good at it. It's not in my wheelhouse. And we all went, that's cool. We've got other people who are really good at it.
Did you? You said that's cool.
I think so.
I would have been like, get the fuck out of this room.
No. Well, no. I that's cool. And then we had another board member who said, well, I can't. I hate it too, and I'm no good at it, but I'll try. And another board member said, I love raising money. I'll be out there. And it's that balance. Not everybody, in my mind, not everybody on the board has to raise money. Yeah. If one board member can make connections in the art world for me, that's just as important as her raising $10,000. Well, maybe not as important as $10,000, but that's just as important as raising money. It's relevant, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. I'm making this up as I go, to be really honest.
Well, you say that, but yeah, I also get the impression you're talking to a lot of people. You take a lot of notes. You're like absorbing a lot of stuff. And
I'm trying.
I don't know. You strike me. You strike me as someone who's trying, not just going gung ho, but knows your own gaps and knowledge, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So
self-awareness, or maybe, I don't know. That's maybe, I don't know.
I think that's the impression I get. So yeah, when you started, I'm always going to take it towards fundraising because that's the part of
non-profit
that I love. How did the fundraising start? What was your first donation? Have you got any donations?
Yes. And so the first donation was, I had the idea for the Unsteady Hand, and I had two of my workmates were like, I kind of told them what we were doing. And they're like, how do we get involved? I was like, I don't know. We guess we'll have a meeting and we'll talk about it. So about a week after we first came up with the idea of the Unsteady Hand, two of my workmates and I sat down at a coffee shop and started talking about the Unsteady Hand, what it could look like and what the art would be like and what the participants would be like. And we were just brainstorming about what our vision could be someday. And I went to the bathroom and I came back and there was a $100 bill on my notebook that a random person in the coffee shop had overheard our conversation and anonymously donated $100 to our cause and then left and asked the girls who were at the table not to reveal who they were ever. And to this day, haven't. That was almost 9 months ago. I mean, we're new, we're babies. But that was 9 months. That was our first. And when that happened, that was my cue that I knew this was going to rock and roll. This was going to be, this was going to work, because some random, who is the most amazing person in the world, gave me a random $100. And it was just amazing. So that was our first donation.
Well, that's beautiful. Why? Just because they overheard.
They overheard our conversation. They were at a different table and overheard our conversation, and just thought we had a good vision. And that was a sign from the universe. That's mostly for your benefit. That was just a sign that things were going to take off and be good.
That is a sign. So tell me about the sign from the universe, because this is a key thing for people to hear.
Oh, sure.
I talk about this a lot, but you've told me a few stories.
I have a philosophy that the universe provides. You know, I'm not a very religious person nor a spiritual person, but I do think that I believe what you put in, so this is probably better. You'll probably like this better than when we first talked about this. My belief is what you put into the universe is what you get back.
Yeah.
And if you provide into the universe well, the universe provides. And that's, so I narrow that down to the statement of the universe provides. But what it really means is if you put it out there, it comes back to you. And that's what I meant when we were, but I didn't explain that to you the first time we had this conversation. So you put it like, nah.
You've edited out the important bit, which is what you put out there.
Right. So, but that's the important bit. But I narrow it down to the universe provides, because it's a lot easier to say it and it's a lot faster. And most people don't challenge it.
my friend said to me years ago, he said you have to put yourself out there so good things happen. Mm-hmm. and the phrase that I love is, the harder you work, the luckier you get.
Same idea.
That's the impression I get with you, is you have a lot of conversations, you talk to a lot of people.
I do.
You put yourself out there a lot, and as a result, good things happen to you.
I concur. So that's what the universe provides means to me, is that what you put out there, you get back.
So has this been like a conscious or unconscious strategy of yours, is to just talk to people, listen to people, you know, just meet as many people as possible?
Yeah, actually very conscious. I am by nature, and nobody believes this that I've met in the past 8 months, I am by nature an introvert. I don't have a lot of friends. I don't socialize. I don't go out to dinner with people. I don't hang out with my workmates. Mm-hmm. I'm a loner. But if you put me in a situation where I need to be social, I'm a lot like my dad, who's kind of the same way as me. He can shine. And so I put myself in this position to go to these AFP meetings, and to go to join the Pikes Peak Arts Council, and to join the Nonprofit Association of Colorado, and go to all their meetings and all their workshops and everything, to purposely put myself out there to meet. Because this, to me, it's all about relationships. Mm-hmm. Everything we do and want to do in the world with the Unsteady Hand has to do with relationships, whether that's relationships with our participants, whether it's relationships with our volunteers, our board, our donors, whoever. It's all about, and the way you make relationships is you meet people.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to meet people, and it's working. You asked, have we raised any money? We've raised $6,000 in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And not asked. I mean, this is kind of stretching the truth, but we have not asked for a penny, and we raised $6,000. I mean, we had some fundraisers, but we've never really. I've never really walked up to somebody and said, "Could you support the Unsteady Hand? We need your money."
Yeah, you haven't.
And when I haven't shaken
the bucket yet. Or gone out. Right. Yeah.
I'm excited to do that, because I think if we can raise $6,000 in 6 months without trying, what happens if I put some energy into it and my board put some energy into it? I think we could meet our needs right now financially in a fairly short period of time, for both sustainability and growth, which are my two really important things in my world right now, is that the Unsteady Hand is both sustainable and grows.
Yeah. But your energy so far has gone into almost that cultivation of relationships, like building relationships, 100%. Meeting people, developing them.
Yeah, I would say that's my focus. And things are happening because of it. So I'm meeting people like you. Mm-hmm. For example, that was because I put myself in a position I didn't want to. I didn't want to do that AFP thing. I don't do conferences. I've never been to a conference in my life.
Yeah.
And now I go to 3 support groups a month, but I go because of the Unsteady Hand, and I get to meet people and encourage them to try what we're doing. And so three days a month, I go to support groups, one in Pueblo, one in Monument, one in Colorado Springs.
Yeah.
I go, I just do stuff now, which I never did. I go to AFP mixers. I've never been to a mixer in my life.
It's funny. There's like the introvert idea. I think there's a lot of introverts in fundraising. There's a woman named Nikki Bell who's an amazing fundraiser that I do like training with, and we do a session called Fundraising for Introverts.
Yeah.
Because there's so many people who identify as introverts, but to be a good fundraiser, you have to put yourself out there like that and make those conversations. Right. And one of the points she made, I think it was her, was she was talking about that having a nonprofit attached to you gives you like an excuse to be brave. It gives you an excuse to talk to people. It gives you a reason to like speak to strangers.
Right.
And there's something really like life changing about that.
Yeah. This, you know, we've discussed before that since I've started the Unsteady Hand, I've made friends. I've never had, right? Which is cool. I never really had a lot of friends. If I had one friend at the time, that was a lot.
Yeah.
And now I could probably count on, probably need both hands to count the number of friends I've got, which is a big deal to me.
Yeah.
Right. And that's cool. And I think you're right. It kind of gives you some purpose and a reason to talk to people. I've got something to talk about now. You know, before I was like, nobody cares what I have to say. It's not that interesting. But now I got to talk about the Unsteady Hand. I'm like, this is great.
You gotta
come and do what we do, and it's fun. And
and
it's interesting. My energy level is like, even right now, I find myself kind of talking really fast and getting really excited. And I kind of do the same thing when I'm talking to people about the Unsteady Hand, and they come in at a higher level because of that, as far as their excitement. Like wherever I come in, they come in like four notches below.
Yeah.
So if I come in midline, they're like, man, well, that's neat. But if I come in super excited and having fun and just jazzed, they come in pretty happy, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if that makes sense at all, but
yeah, it does. So you have to
the higher I come in, the higher they come in. And if I don't come in high enough, they don't buy in.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
They absorb a bit of you, so you have to dial it up.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what's next for you? Like, what's your priorities now in terms of fundraising, but the nonprofit as a whole? What's the next 6 months?
Oh, geez. You should have asked me that before.
What's the next 2 weeks?
In the next month, we're having our party, Shaking in the New Year, which is it's not a fundraiser at all. Mm-hmm. It's a party to say thank you to our supporter.
Hey.
Did your computer die?
No, I think it was yours.
No.
No? Oh, mine.
Really?
You just froze at me.
Oh, you totally went away, and it said change. Your little icon change.
Okay, that's fine.
That's right. We'll keep going.
So tell me what's happening in the next few weeks.
On the 25th of January, we're having our that's our old one. Our first one was called Shake, Rattle, and Be Whole. That was our first launch party. Was Shake, Rattle, Be Whole.
Oh, Be Whole.
Like with the whole being kind of thing.
Okay.
That was our first event that I was expecting 40 people at. We had 150 people show up. And we raised $1,500 in our first, and we were faking it. We had no idea what was happening. We had 150, for example, we had no idea what was happening. We had 150 people walk through the door because I had somebody counting with a clicker. Uh-huh. And we left the event with about 14 email addresses. That was dumb. That was a lesson to be learned right there.
And so what would you do differently next time?
Well, for example, the next party we're having on January 25th, we are having a door prizes. And to be entered for the door prizes, you have to fill out a thing with your name, your address, your email address, and your phone number. And we'll probably do a little survey on it of like two or three questions. And we can't decide what those questions are now. So we're going to capture that information this time for everybody who walks through the door. Nice. Because that was a lesson learned. I mean, that was the only like... you had asked me earlier what happens when the shit happens. The shit happened on our first event where we didn't capture any email addresses and any information from all these people who gave us money and joined us for our opening and were so excited about our thing. And there was no way for me to reach out to them and say thank you. It was so embarrassing. And I was mad. I was not at anybody, but mostly myself. And so this time we're doing it just we're taking the opposite tack. It's like, if you want to play, you got to give me your name, your address, your phone number, your email address.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so we're going to capture this information this time, which is what we're doing different. We're making it, we're giving them a reason for us to capture the information by having some gifts to be given away as door prizes. Mm-hmm. That all these pieces of paper will go into a pot, and then we'll pull out names for a couple of silly little prizes. But just to motivate people. And then our party is going to be, I'm setting up a pop-up creativity lab for people to do mm-hmm. fish prints, Gaitaku, which is what our first creativity lab was. So they'll be doing art. We've got a band coming to play. Mm-hmm. And then our partner organization is going to provide the catering and the alcohol. And they're pretty much funding the whole thing. So it's not really a fundraising event. It's a thank you, to get back to what we were originally talking about. It's a fundraiser again. It's a way to connect with people, build relationships, so that long-term down the road, maybe I can spend some energy requesting some funds from these people. But right now, I'm going to have one sign on one table that says, your support is important to us. We're a 501c3. If you care to give us, I don't know what it's going to say yet, but if you'd like to give us a donation, we're not going to say no. But I'm not going to ask anybody for money at this event. Other than that one sign that says, if you'd like to participate in giving us funds, that's great. But this is just a thank you to the people, to our participants, to our supporters so far, to the people that I hope support us in the future. And it's a marketing gig for the senior living facility where we're having it, which is kind of a high-end senior living facility who's requested that we start doing creativity labs there. Mm-hmm. They reached out to us to see if we couldn't supply a service to them. And it's blossomed into this. Once again, it's a relationship that went from, can you do a creativity lab, to how about we throw you a party of 200 of your closest friends? I was like, sure.
So these 200 people, I mean, the goal here is to, you're depositing in, you know, in their emotional bank.
Yes.
And starting the relationship, and they're going to come away from it thinking, that's a great event. We weren't hassled for money.
Right.
And maybe start to simmer, how can we help? And then you're going to follow up down the road.
And it's purely a thank you. I mean, it's kind of what we were talking about, being real. It's allowing me to say thank you to all these people with a party without asking them for money. But they all know in the back of their mind that I'm going to ask them for money eventually, probably. That's why they're there. But I'm not, it's about building that relationship slowly. It's like one of the things I say about the unsteady hand is, as we grow, is I want to creep, not bound. And I kind of feel that way about asking for money. You know, I want to creep into that relationship and then bound into the ask. Right.
Yeah.
I don't want to come up, say, invite somebody to a party and then say, hey, would you give me $20? That seems neat.
It's tacky.
It's tacky. It's not what you do in real life. But what you can do is say, why don't you come to my party? I'm going to feed you. I'm going to give you a couple of drinks. I'm going to give a couple of prizes. And then if you had a good time, let's sit down and have a
next week.
Next week, how about $20? No. No, but you know what I mean? It's about developing relationships. I mean, I just think really, I hate to keep using the word relationships because I feel like it's getting redundant already and it's only like half an hour in. But it really, to me, is all about relationships.
That's fundraising. And the more of these fundraising conferences you go to, you're going to see it's the word that gets thrown around all the time and has done for decades because that's
what it is.
Fundraising.
Right. I mean, they say cliches are cliches for a reason, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. Okay. Well, if people want to know more about you and the Unsteady Hand, then where do we find you? Where do we follow you?
Well, we interestingly enough, we're very across the internets. And the reason that's interesting is because our participants are not. Most of my cohorts and my participants are in their 70s, late 60s, 70s, and 80s, and they're not really into the internet. But we're on Twitter, kind of. I'm still figuring out Twitter. It confuses me. I'm not going to lie. Twitter confuses me, but I think it's important. Facebook, we're at The Unsteady Hand on Facebook. Mm-hmm. We're on Instagram at The Unsteady Hand with underscores between the names. And and then Twitter, we're at The Unsteady Hand, all one word.
And you share a lot of like visual stuff. You share some of the artwork.
Yeah. So every piece that's produced is photographed and put on Facebook and Instagram. Nice. 75 to 80% of it's put on the website. The reason that there's a difference is because it's a lot harder to get it uploaded on the website than it is Facebook and Instagram. It's just really easy to do it, and that way people can share with their families across the nation or the world for that matter. their works that they've done without having to take pictures and send emails. It makes it really easy for them to share their experience with other people. I think that's really important. So
that's really nice.
Most of my participants don't go to Facebook or Instagram, but their families do. So it's not really for my participants that we do that. It's for my their families to kind of engage in the process and kind of see what they're doing. So I don't know. It's cool.
Do you put your art up there? Do you make that?
I don't make art. I'm not an artist. I'm a facilitator. What? Yeah, I don't.
So really what do you do at these events? You just like schmooze around?
I schmooze around. I facilitate. So I grew up with a mother who has a master's in fine arts. So I grew up in the world of art. So I wouldn't qualify myself. Like, I don't make art, but I would consider myself an artist or artsy. Yeah. Maybe I'm artsy. I'm not an artist. So I facilitate these labs. And then I also have artists come in and facilitate the labs who are true studio artists. One of my goals is to pay them once I make enough money. I think artists need to be valued. So I think, you know, everybody's like, oh, artists can just come in and teach a lab. Well, sure, but I think that artist should make some money and get some gas money for doing that, right?
Yeah.
That's one of my motivations to raise more money is so that I can share the wealth, right?
Yeah.
And involve everybody. Instead of being always needy. And I think lots of nonprofits have this idea that because they're a nonprofit, they don't have to pay for anything, right? Maybe that's true. Maybe I'm naive and green and maybe that is a fact. But to me, there's some value and you get back what you pay for in a lot of ways. And if you give an artist, I mean, it's hard to describe exactly what I'm trying to say.
I know what you're saying. And I think, but actually I think a lot of nonprofits would agree with you that they want to pay the fair wage. Actually the problem more so probably comes from the funders.
Right.
That the people who are donating and the grant organizations and the individuals who donate think, well, why don't you just get it for free? You're a charity. I would rather my money go elsewhere.
Right. Well, luckily, our funding streams are people with Parkinson's, the medical community, kind of in general, the senior community, and the arts community. Those are kind of our three main funding streams. And most of those people, especially the arts community, see the value in that. The other thing I'll say about that kind of that made me kind of sparked a thought was when I tell people who are not in the nonprofit world that one of my fundraising goals is to make enough money to pay myself, they look at me like I'm crazy. Like, you're going to get paid? Really? That's so wrong. And you talk to anybody in the fundraising world, I say one of my goals is to make enough money fundraising so that I can pay myself so I can do this full time. They're like, of course you are.
Yeah.
Right? So it's, you know, that whole, like, what is money concept to different people? in and out of the fundraising and nonprofit world. So part of my job is to convince donors that artists are important and they deserve to be paid. And that, sure, the Imagination Space will give me their facility for free, but I don't mind giving them $5 a head to help facilitate their mission, right? Paying it forward. Old Davis Finney, I just offered to give him 3% of my profits. I still think of it as a business in my head. 3% of my fundraising, I offered to give to another nonprofit that I believe in. It's kind of funny, when I was a tile setter in Portland, Oregon for about 10 years. And I started this thing where I gave 5% of my profits to Habitat for Humanity, which I thought was really cool. I thought that was like really amazing and really proactive and paying it forward. And to a T, I can think of like one out of maybe 1,000 customers who didn't say, well, why don't you just give me 5% off? And I was like, and that's how people think, right? Yeah. And then my goal is to change that thinking that you got to pay it forward.
Yeah.
Right. It's not all about taking it in and getting.
Yeah.
If you don't give back, is that just what we were talking about before? It's that universe thing. It's what you put out there, you get back. And if all you do is take and you don't give out, your nonprofit's going to last a year.
Yeah.
Or maybe not even that long. I don't know. So I think the financials are really tricky to talk to people about. But if you don't talk about them, it's not going to happen. It goes back to the other thing we talked about, being real.
And being open and honest and
transparent. I think transparency is a big thing with the Unsteady Hand. I'm so transparent. I like when to post our budget on Facebook, so all my friends know, like all of our Facebook, because we have 400 Facebook friends for our Unsteady Hand. And I would love for them to see our budget. So they go, wow, you need that much money to do what you do? But then everybody's like, no, don't do that. Don't do that. So I'm not doing that. But that's how transparent I want to be.
It's but interesting.
I'm not going to be that transparent because I got to find a balance.
there's an organization you should look at called GiveWell, givewell.org, and they're ultimately transparent, and they publish like all their budgets on their website, but they publish a recording of all their board meetings. So they record the audio of the board meetings and put them on the website for anyone to listen to. Every time the organization makes a mistake, like if they do like, you know, if there's an incident, HR incident, or if there's a problem in the office, or they lose a file, they type it up and put it on the website, and they're like, here's the mistakes we made in July.
Oh, interesting. I could do that because I make a lot of mistakes.
You're going to need a bigger website.
My first mistake, I had, I spent like hours and hours and hours making my first brochure, my little trifold brochure, and it's color, glossy, beautiful things. And I'd made two mistakes. I had 300 printed, which is way too many in retrospect. You don't need 300 at a time. You need like 50 at a time. Well, for me and my size organization. And I had a typo in it. So I had to throw them all away because I was just one word, but I wasn't going to use a brochure with the typo in it. So I had to throw them all away and reorder 300 more brochures and wasted. That's when I had about $170 in the bank. And I spent pretty much all of it on brochures. And so that, that's funny. Anyway,
there's a lesson for you.
I make a lot of mistakes.
All right. Well, listen, will you come back in like 6 months or a year and let us know how you're getting on? Give us an update.
6 months. This is fun.
Yeah, that'd be good. And that way you have the pressure of having to report back to all the podcast listeners and tell us how you've leapt and bounded.
So how much pressure, like how many podcast listeners are we talking about? Like how much pressure is
none.
This? Oh, none. No, okay. That's not much pressure.
But I'm very stern.
All right.
Well, listen, thanks a million, Mo. Thanks for coming on and thanks for being so open and honest. And it's a great project. I'm really looking forward to seeing what you do with it.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, you know what we forgot?
What?
Real quick. www.theunsteadyhand.org.
Yeah.
We forgot that. We didn't talk about that. That's where you go to find the big picture.
That's where all your mistakes are listed.
That's where my mistakes will be listed. I might do that. I kind of like that. Would be a way for me to be transparent without giving everybody my budget.
It's pretty good. Well, I mean, I'd love to see that as a Facebook post. Hey guys, this is my this is the flyer that I did 300 with the typo. I had to bin it. You know, laughing at yourself, self-deprecation. I bet if you did that, someone would come in and offer to pay for the next 300.
I bet you're right. And I actually, I did just acknowledge you just got two emails from me, one of which I invited my whole 90 people on my mailing list, which is not a lot. I invited 90 people to a party and I didn't put the date on it.
Yeah.
So I had to send a second email saying, I'm an idiot. Here's the second email.
And I meant to say that to you. Look at your open rates, because the emails that get the highest open rates are the ones where like, oops, we made a mistake, or sorry, we messed up, or people open them because we're dying to see what the mistake was.
And people actually responded to the second email saying, wow, that was funny. I like the way you own that rather than not. And so I got I actually got emails for the first time of all the emails I've ever sent. I've got more emails responding to the mistake I made than all the good news I'm trying to share.
People love mistakes, which is good news for me and you.
Funny.
All right. I'm going to leave you to it. So let's sign off, say goodbye, and theunsteadyhand.org.
Thank you, Simon. That's where we find you.
Thanks so much, Mo. Take it easy.
You've been listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and head over to changefundraising.com to learn more or get in touch with Simon. Or don't. Whatever. You're big enough to make your own decisions.
Hello, this is Morgan Freeman. For discounts on Simon's best-selling online fundraising courses, go to www.changefundraising.com/training and use coupon code podcast. Complete them in your own time, wherever you want. Get busy living or get busy buying.